Big show on Thursday, August 15th. First, we got a status update regarding a pending legal action involving some high school girls track runners in Connecticut who are appealing to the federal government. They're not happy. They have to run against transgender athletes, boys transgendering to become women. We also took a look at the ongoing controversy surrounding Big Pharma and opioids. But I had a few things to say about the recent shooting of six police officers in Philadelphia, and Aaron and I got into a couple of discussions earlier in the week regarding good bourbon whiskey and men's athletic protective cups.
Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
It's all your fault. You guys, you gals who are members of the National Rifle Association that we talk to here on the station all the time, it is all your fault. Did you realize that? It's all your fault. If you are an NRA member, if you support the NRA, if you have an NRA membership card, it's all your fault. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner you come to that realization, the sooner that you look yourselves in the mirror and understand that it's not the criminals that are the problem. As soon as you realize that it's the NRA that's the problem, you'll all be better off. Don't you understand that? I certainly hope you do. It's what the modern day left in this country, it's what the modern day Democratic Party in this country wants you to do. So if you have any self-respect, if you have any sort of realization that you need to step up and be the best you can be, just realize, will you please, as we get up and underway here at 9 minutes past two on this Thursday, just realize that it's all your fault. What am I talking about? Well, first of all, hi there, how are you? It's Connecticut Today for a Thursday, and we are at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Once again, easy to get to us right here on Fairfield County's only live local talk show in the afternoon, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Paul Pacelli here, Aaron Johnson on the other side of glass will be with you till 6 today. And, of course, we're talking about the aftermath of that shootout in Philadelphia where you had several police officers wounded. And the mayor of Philadelphia today, some stooge I had never heard of, Jim Kenney, instead of coming out and saying this guy should have never gotten on the street, this guy immediately comes out, and who does he blame? The NRA, the National Rifle Association. Folks, it is like clockwork here. Anytime there is any sort of a shooting in an inner city or in a major metropolitan area that's run by Democrats, the first thing they will do, it's like one of those old plays. And old, I mean, one of these plays that's been revived over and over again on Broadway. You know, Kiss Me, Kate, Hello, Dolly, The Scarlet Pimpernel, Guys and Dolls. Not these new productions that try to do cutting-edge stuff, but you go back to the old favorites, you know, Fiddler on a Roof, things like that. You get the broken record over and over and over again. So like clockwork, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney calls out the NRA and demands a resolution to the nation's gun crisis, saying officers need help keeping numerous weapons out of criminals' hands. Kenney, speaking at a news conference after the standoff ended, the left six officers injured, was underway at a home in North Philadelphia. The standoff ending early today, 8 hours after it started. He said, quote, our officers deserve to be protected, and they don't deserve to be shot at by a guy for hours with an unlimited supply of weapons and an unlimited supply of bullets. It's disgusting, and we need to do something about it quickly. Kennedy demanded action against the NRA. Shocking, huh? Saying if the state and federal government won't stand up to the powerful gun lobby, they should let them police themselves. The government on both the federal and state level, he says, they don't want to do anything about getting these guns off the streets and getting them out of the hands of criminals. When's the last time a criminal gave up a gun? Now, I know it does happen sometimes. You get gun buybacks. That's not a bad idea. When's the last time a criminal gave up a gun? This guy, have you heard the rap sheet on this guy? Have you heard the rap sheet on this suspect here? You never hear about the rap sheets from these mayors, though, when they're firing out of the NRA. You never hear about the rap sheet. Maurice Hill, the suspect in that hours-long standoff that left six police officers wounded, has a, I'm shocked. Hey, Aaron, can we get the drum roll here, please? Yeah, because we need a drum roll here. Go ahead. You won't believe this. Maurice Hill, the suspect in the Philly standoff, has a lengthy criminal record dating back to the year 2000. That's shocking, isn't it? Isn't that shocking? A 19-year career criminal. A 12-page criminal record with a variety of charges, including burglary, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment of another person, and gun charges. Not all the charges resulted in a conviction, it should be noted here. But wait, there's more, as the great Ron Popeil used to say when he was peddling his pocket fisherman years ago. Hill also has a record in the federal system. Now, one law enforcement official said, well, I haven't exactly seen the federal record, but I've been advised the record in the federal system includes... Wait a minute, we need another drum roll here. Mr. Producer, can we do this? Go ahead. His role in the federal prison system includes a lengthy prison sentence for weapons charges. I'm shocked. You mean this guy who obviously was taking time out from his Mensa meeting and he was on his way to his Boy Scout, he's probably a pack leader. You mean to tell me he had weapons charges? So this guy quoted here by CNN, Philadelphia DA Larry Krasner. You know what he said? Quote, I think it's clear this man should not have been on the streets. Thank you, DA Krasner. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have an idea. Instead of immediately like a knee-jerk reaction when you go to the doctor for your physical and he hits you in the knee with that hammer and your knee jumps forward, your leg, and he says, okay, your nerve, response is good. Maybe instead of doing that and blaming the NRA, maybe we should get these guys off the streets. Well, Paul, that means you have to build more prisons. Yeah, build them. Build as many. We got plenty of open spaces in this country. Build more prisons. Get these vile pieces of filth off of the streets. And did you see what else went on yesterday in this? The Philadelphia police were being heckled. Did you see it? Don't believe me if you don't want. Go ahead, Google it. Go to the great God Google. Or as you South Jersey people say, Google. Go to the great God Google. Go to Yahoo. Go to Yahoo, whatever you use. Go to Bing. People in the neighborhood trying to, sitting there like a spectator sport, laughing at the cops. You know what? Honest to God, you know this would never happen because policemen and police women don't do it. Hey, they should turn around and leave when somebody should. Go ahead, go get the guy yourself. So how about it? The NRA, is it all the NRA's fault? It's always the NRA's fault. You agree with the mayor here or not? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. What portion of the blame, shall I say, does the NRA deserve here? Or is this the same old, tired, lame, broken record, yellowed piece of script paper used over and over again. How about you members, you NRA members that listen to me? Did you know you're in an organization? It's your fault. You know, your organization, they bear the blame on this. Yep.
Now I just sit here. Look how healthy I am. I have two apples and a banana that I haven't eaten. Do I get brownie points? Do I get points for having them in the studio near me? Although Aaron can vouch for me. He sees me eating my apple or two a day. He sees me going at it with a banana, you know, usually in the 5 o'clock hours when the banana comes up for that little extra bit of fiber and sugar. I'm trying to, you know, treat myself a little better, eating less junk, still guzzling Jack Daniels, but less junk. I'm kidding. I'm sorry. You know, every time I mention bourbon to you, no, really, every time, and I don't mean to besmirch the guy because in the 3 months we've worked together, I've got nothing but great things to say about him. But I got to tell you something. You want to get Aaron Johnson to give you that big smile? Can I just say something? Just mention any brand of bourbon.
I mean, it's some good stuff.
No,
I can't.
No, it's good stuff. Listen. There's nothing. Now, bourbon is one of those things where you don't have to jam 18 shots. Now, you get a little two fingers of bourbon over ice, sitting there at the bar talking about the, you know, solving the problems of the world. No, most of the people I know that like bourbon, unlike the people I knew that did that in college, no, most people I know that like bourbon, it's like what they call it. When you live down south, it's a sipping whiskey.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
That's all it is.
You don't do shots. I mean, you can do shots of bourbon, but it's a waste because it's like taking shots of gasoline.
And it's, I mean, when you get a good bourbon over some ice, you're sitting down, you got some good people, you're talking about things, like you say,
absolutely,
trying to figure out, you know, the mysteries of the world with a good, nice, tall one in
bourbon,
your hand.
And you got a blunt going there, too. It's, no, you can't have the, is that a bad thing for me to?
No,
it's just, the bourbon is all you'll admit to, right?
No, that's all I do. I'll admit that's all I do. Just a little bit of bourbon, a little bit of ice, and just relax.
Okay. Like the way you said it, just relax. We'd be chillaxing with old Mr. Daniels there. Little Kentucky sour mash. Boy, we got something for you right here. Yeah. All right, 203-333-9422-203-333-WICC. Yeah, I don't drink all that much. A little bourbon is nice on the rocks every so often. Now, what I do have to be a good boy with, there's only really one mixed drink that I ever drink, and that, of course, is the well-made, well-balanced Kamikaze right there. Not real easy to make because you're talking about three different things you got to mix in there. It's all portion and proportion control. You know what I'm saying? The classic Kamikaze, vodka, lime juice, and triple sec. But it's the proportions. Like, too much triple sec, it's too sweet. Too much lime juice, you're like, you know. Too much vodka, you're like, well, she's not that bad looking, you know. Traffic and weather together on the sixes and WICC 600. Hi there, 18 past 4 right here, WICC 600 online, WICC600.com. How are you? Yankees win today. The Yankees win.
Yeah, baby.
All right, Yankees win again. Tomorrow night, the Orioles take on Joe's Undercoating and Transmission. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Any one of those guys on the Orioles could beat the snot out of me. 17-2, they finished the year against Baltimore. 17-2. They lost two of their first three. They went 1-2 in their first three. And then they won 16 in a row. Wow. Eesh. Well, it's too bad. A once proud franchise, the Orioles, who actually, if you go back to like 2012 to like 2016, they were actually pretty good for like a 5-6 year stretch. Problem is, I think their owner Peter Angelos, I think he's been like drooling for the past 5 years. Nobody knows how much of a say he's been
he has in the team, and they never spent money on pitching, and they had a real good offensive lineup for a few years, but got to be able to throw the ball, boys and girls. So the Yankees win it, and they now go 17-2 against Baltimore. Cleveland. They at Cleveland, or they, it's home. It's at the stadium, Cleveland. It should be. That could be a playoff preview, too. So I love all my Red Sox fan friends and my Met fan friends. All of a sudden, well, you guys are just beating up on Baltimore. Yeah. What'd the Red Sox do last year? What was their combined record against, like, Toronto, Baltimore, and Tampa? Something like that. Nobody complained about that. But my dear relatives and friends and longtime radio and college compadres, well, the Yankees are beating up on Baltimore. They suck. Well, yeah. You're supposed to beat the snot out of bad teams. Jeez. What are you supposed to do? Go to, is this America 2019? Well, we know you're really bad, so we're going to allow you a 5-run lead before we start. How's that? So we have to beat you by 6 runs or better. Well, they do anyway, so it's just all my friends who root for the Mets, all of a sudden the Mets. I have to laugh. All of a sudden I see people wearing Mets garb. Now, honest to God, the last week, and listen, I'm not one of these, you know, Yankee fan who hates the Mets. No, I want the Mets to do well. 2 good teams in New York is good. It's good for baseball. It's good for Mets fans. They spend money, too. There's nothing wrong with the Mets doing well. But, boy, I got to tell you. Last few 3 or 4 days, they're like little blue beacons walking across the street with their Mets shirts, which is good, though. You spend money on the team, they can spend more money to get better. People go to the games. People get paid. It's the circle of life. It's the circle of life. Who said it? Was it Syndergaard who said this is our town now or something like that a couple of years ago? Yeah. How'd that work out? Cut your hair, Thor, by the way. Seriously. Cut your. See, that's one reason I would love. And it's never going to happen. I would love to see Noah Syndergaard traded to the Yankees, only because the minute he signs the contract, off goes that hair. Sorry. Off goes that hair. All those locks, snip. See you later. Goodbye. I have a friend of mine once who said, oh, that Yankee thing, that's just so old. It's tradition. I said, no, it's tradition, right? Jacket and tie on the road and look like a ball player. Trim your hair. You don't need hair down to your ass playing baseball. Look like a ball player. Did you ever have one of those little league coaches? One of my little league coaches said, my son's coach said, let's look good out there. Well, he said, pick up your pants. Everybody wear your belt. Tuck your shirt in. Pick up the high socks. You know, high socks are nice. Make sure, don't wear your cap sideways. All this other stuff. Oh, my God. And now the thing, too, is you don't curve the brim. You got the flat brim, and you leave the holographic sticker on. Come on, man. It's a cap. Stop that. Jeez. Fuck. Can't style my rear. I'm just kidding, Aaron. Come on. Look like him. Look good out there. You know how your coaches always say, come on, let's look good out there. Let's go. Stop staring at the grass when you're 5 years old or 6 years old, looking up at the clouds, wondering what's for dinner, out there in right field where nobody hits the ball and you got to go to the bathroom. Come on, get in the game. Stay in the game here, Johnson. Let's go. You got yelled at that, didn't you? You were an attentive kid?
I was a very attentive
kid
because I loved baseball.
Love that.
I was such an attentive. They used to put me at my first like year and a half I played baseball.
Yeah.
They put me at first base because I was the tallest kid.
So you had to pick.
And I could catch.
Get those live. You could. Yeah, oh, man, what are you doing?
I could catch.
So
and
you
I was
saved a lot
kid.
Of errors.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's what, being in the infield, you had to be attentive.
Well, you had to
like
be able to look up, look alive, right? Yeah.
Between it was. I'm playing baseball, and I love this. And so, yeah, I was actually a pretty attentive kid.
Now, did you guys in Little League, because they did this with my son's team and my wife and I at the time, we used to laugh about this. Did you guys do a cup check?
Oh, we always did cup checks.
Stand there, you had a bang.
See, we did cup checks to ourselves. That was the worst part about it. We had our coaches would be like, make sure you do a cup. He was like, make sure you have a cup on. I don't want to have to do a cup check.
Yeah.
And then I remember one kid said, what's a cup check? And another kid had a bat and said, like, here's a cup check. So, yeah, no, we definitely used to do cup checks to ourselves, which was great. Yeah.
And then, you know, there was always that one or two kids on my son's team, like, that didn't have, you know, they didn't hear it. And the coach always go, are you serious? What do you, you know what I mean? I mean, they played, but it's like, I got to talk to your parents after the
game. No, and it's funny. The older that you get, the less guys, you know, wear cups.
Yes,
and
I've heard that. What are
nuts.
You, crazy?
I remember being in high
nuts?
School. I was in high school, and I wore a cup in high school because
because you were normal.
Exactly.
Because when it comes to the old twig and berries there either is or there isn't. That's it. Yeah, a lot of guys. I heard that discussed by a couple of friends of mine who coach. So, and I guess there's no, you know, the leagues don't mandate it, but come on, man. Are you kidding me? And you play the infield?
Yeah, I said I played with guys that, you know, that were at shortstop and played with a guy that played third base for, you know, 2.5-3 years, yeah. And he never wore a cup. And I thought he was the craziest guy. Between him, even our catcher wore a cup.
What's the complaint? That it's not comfortable?
It's
cuts
not comfortable.
Down.
That was the.
Well,
I
got
I'm
news for you. There's something that's a whole lot more not comfortable. Let's try that one. See how you like that. Oh, ground ball, bad hop.
I used to play in the outfield, and I would wear a cup in the outfield, and they thought I was crazy. And I said,
No, I'm not
doing that.
There's a reason there's a hood on the engine. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. What are you, nuts? Jeez. All right, 26 after. Traffic and weather together on the sixes right here at WICC 600 online at WICC600.com.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
It is Connecticut Today, of course, right here on WICC 600 online, WICC600.com. Thanks so much for joining us as we update a story that we first told you about a couple of months ago regarding some Hartford area female track athletes, girls running track, and not essentially happy that there are guys or high school age gentlemen transgendering to be females and are allowed to run against girls and are frankly beating them on a pretty consistent basis and also setting records at state meets in the process. We're being joined in this segment for a few minutes by Christiana Holcomb. Christiana is legal counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom, and they're representing Selena Soul, who was one of the Glastonbury High School track athletes, not happy with this whole thing. And first of all, Christiana, thanks for taking the time out to join us. And we now hear and read, as this case moves on through you folks of the Alliance Defending Freedom, that the federal government's going to be taking a look at this, correct?
That's exactly right. It's really good news. It's a good step in the right direction. We learned on August the 7th that the U.S. Department of Education has opened an investigation into the Title IX complaint of these three young female athletes in Connecticut.
Now, Title IX, I've talked about that here on the show numerous times, but for folks who may be listening, Christiana, who, yeah, they've kind of heard of it and they know it has something to do with athletics, give us a nutshell description of why Title IX is important here and what exactly its bearing is.
Sure. Well, nearly 50 years ago, Congress passed a law that we refer to as Title IX, and it was designed to eliminate sex discrimination against women and ensure that women have equal educational opportunities and equal athletic opportunities. And that's what we're really focusing in on here. They were frankly, it's because of Title IX in great part that we even have women's sports in the first place, recognizing that if we want to give women the opportunity to be champions, to showcase their talents, to advance to the next levels of competition, to get those college scholarships, we've got to create a place where biological women can compete against biological women and really showcase those talents. Well, that is now coming to a head in the state of Connecticut because, as you mentioned, the Statewide Athletic Association is now allowing biological males to come in, to compete in, and to dominate women's sports.
Now, as you well know, Christiana, the CIAC, to which you refer to, the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic Conference, the CIAC, they're, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they're just trying to pull a Pontius Pilate here, washing their hands, saying, hey, we're just doing what the non-discrimination statutes here in the state say. Don't look at us, right?
certainly what they claim. I can tell you, having looked at the law, I think their interpretation is absolutely incorrect. But even if it is correct, that does not mean that they get an exemption from complying with federal law. Mm-hmm. And federal law, Title IX, is really clear. We've got to give girls these equal athletic opportunities, and that is taken away from them when you allow males to dominate their sports.
You probably caught blowback on this, Christiana, I'm sure. And Christiana Holcomb is the guest. She is of the legal counsel at the Alliance for Defending Freedom involved in this case. You have obviously, Christiana, heard the criticism coming from many folks around the country, folks here in Connecticut. Hey, you're just a conservative legal organization that hates transgenders and wants to keep them out of athletics, you dirty right wingers, you. What's your reaction to all that?
That's absolutely false. So Alliance Defending Freedom is one of the nation's most respected Supreme Court advocates. We have actually represented members of the LGBT community in other matters. Look, this should frankly be a nonpartisan, non-controversial issue. We're talking about women's rights here. Yeah. We're talking about fairness in women's sports. And we're trying to ensure that young female athletes have the opportunity to achieve their dreams and to be champions.
There are a couple of columnists here in the state, and there are many people who say, well, you know what? Yeah, legally, this may be on shaky ground, Christiana, but they say, you know what? We're a better moral society if we just let this ride, you know, the way it is, but the law is the law. Correct me. You know, when I came in today at 10 o'clock to prep for my show, the law was the law when I came in at 10 o'clock.
I mean, look, the law is the law, but really, are we truly saying that we're a better society if we are allowing males to displace females? I mean, this is 2019. You know, are we really going to dial back over 50 years of advances for women in athletics and in education by stealing away their athletic opportunities? I mean, that to me is a moral failing.
We have a couple of minutes left here. Guide me through the legal maze here now, Christiana. What is next here? What has transpired so far, and what do you think the next steps are here in this case?
Well, we filed the Title IX complaint back in June. As we mentioned earlier, the U.S. Department of Education has opened an investigation, and they're really going to be in the driver's seat from this point forward. So they may conduct some interviews. They will certainly be conducting an investigation, and then it could take anywhere from a couple of months to even up to a couple of years for them to ultimately decide the outcome of the matter.
So the Education Department can actually have first say on this. So what if they came out, Christiana, and said, well, you know what? Yeah, you know, there's really no illegality here per se. Is there then more legal recourse for Selena Soles and these other girls, or is that case closed?
No, it's entirely possible that there would be other legal resource, recourse. Sorry, can't talk. It's 4
it's
o'clock,
okay.
Right?
It's okay.
but again, entirely dependent on how exactly the U.S. Department of Education comes back. And frankly, we're optimistic that the Department of Education will see what we think is a very clear violation of Title IX.
Moving forward, what would your, and I don't want you to go out on the limb here, but finally, what would be your message to female athletes who are looking at this, Selena, maybe reading about this, some of these girl track athletes and other athletes around the state here of Connecticut reading about this, talking about it amongst themselves? What do you think a message should be to them?
I think a message to them should be, don't be discouraged. We see you. We see the unfairness of what is taking place in women's athletics across the country, and we're stepping in and we're going to try to fix that. Young women like you deserve the opportunity to be champions and to compete on a level playing field, and that's what we've asked the Department of Education to restore.
Christiana Holcomb, legal counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom. Christiana, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Have a happy day. Christiana Holcomb there at the Alliance for Defending Freedom. They have gotten themselves in this case, representing at least the young track runner from Glastonbury High, Selena Soles, who says, listen, I don't think they're doing this with any malice here, but the idea is women want to run against women. Girls want to run against girls. And again, you have
young gentlemen who are transitioning to women. They are, you know, racking up record runs, running as transgendering women. And a lot of people, including myself, you know, without any malice toward transgender rights, a lot of folks look at this and say, hey, this is just, it's not right. You know, there's right and wrong in society. It's not right.
Crazy ideas, madness, opinions, ranting and or raving. The lines are open. 203-333-9422. Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli. WICC 600.
You know, all this stuff about me ranting and raving, I got to talk to the boss. Wait, come on. Don't the front office listen to me? Thank you, Aaron. It is ranting and or raving. What's worse, a rant or a rave? I guess a rant will be worse. I'm not sure. Stuff is so confusing here. All right, we are at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Earlier this week, actually it's a story today by the fine folks of the Connecticut Mirror. I know a lot of those folks up there in Hartford doing this. New numbers are out on the number of opioids that were given out across the state between 2006 and 2012. Now, we'll get into the numbers in a little bit, but we want to talk about the whole, I guess, the bullseye that opioids have on them right now. And a lot of people say, oh, yeah, go after the opioids, big pharma, we got to take them down. Other people say, hey, how about a little bit of a timeout here? And among the folks calling for just a measured look at this would be Jennifer C. Braceras. She's a columnist and former commissioner of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. She served there from 2001 to 2007, and she now writes and blogs for the Independent Women's Forum. Jennifer, Paul here in Bridgeport, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. The tone of what I guess you're saying here is take a breath, right? Step back. Let's not go into this. You know, we had the assault on big tobacco and big this and big that. And now, Jennifer, everybody seems to be, you know, training their crosshairs on big pharma.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is it's one thing to be angry at companies for, you know, sort of corporate misbehavior. It's another thing for state governments or local governments, city governments, to sue companies that make legal products to try to recoup money that they spend on social services. I mean, the job of government is to pay for services that it spends with taxpayer money, right? And mm-hmm. if the taxpayers do not want their taxes raised, then the onus is on government officials to make tough budgetary decisions, not to go and sue private companies to fund government largesse. And that's what's happening here with a lot of these lawsuits.
Yeah, so in other words, what you're saying, Jennifer, and this has kind of been my thought here, is okay, you're right. Corporate malfeasance is one thing. We have a legal system for that, but I know here in Connecticut and a lot of other states, you know, Jennifer, honest to God, I hate to say this, but I think they just see a big, with all due respect to whatever intentions they may have, I think they see a big ATM out there. I really do.
Oh, they absolutely do. I mean, they did it with, as you said, big tobacco. They're trying to do it with the oil companies, suing them and getting them to, quote unquote, pay for the effects of climate change, whatever those are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say anything is that. That would be billions. What'll be next? They'll certainly go after the gun manufacturers. They'll certainly go after fast food companies. Anything that causes a social ill is potentially a victim of these types of nuisance lawsuits. But luckily in Connecticut, you have a judge who threw out the cases brought by Bridgeport and New Haven and the other municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he recognized that these were totally lawless.
And you know, Jennifer, it's interesting.
People always complain to me, and I'm sure you've heard the complaints too. Well, drugs are so expensive here. Drugs this and drugs that. You know, why is a $40 pill here only $2 in country X? And I tell them, well, that's because of liability laws. In fact, I mean, Jennifer, a lot of people don't realize, you probably do, that some of these gargantuan lawsuits and legal actions, you know, class action and others, are just not possible in other countries.
Well, right, of course. And then all of these settlements and the cost of litigation is ultimately passed on to the consumer in some form or another, either in the form of higher prices or often drug manufacturers will pull products from the market if they think that they'll expose them to liability. For example, many people do not know that there's a vaccination or was a vaccination available for Lyme disease. That's something that many people suffer from, and when they get it, they can, it can have debilitating effects for years and years and years.
Yep.
I found this out when I took my dog to the vet, and I asked her, I said, why is it that we vaccinate dogs for Lyme disease, but there's no vaccine for humans? She said, actually, there was a vaccine for humans, but there were so many lawsuits that they've pulled it off the market, and no one can get it. And I researched it and found out that that is, in fact, true.
Is it given in other countries? Do you know that, or is it just blocked here in the U.S.?
I do not know. Okay. I think that they absolutely stopped making it altogether.
Yeah, I mean, look, and in interest of full disclosure here, Jennifer, and I've said this on my show here in Connecticut a number of times, my ex-wife used to work for her. She just retired from a major drug company. And so I kind of have a little more of the inside as to what goes on inside these major companies. And it's frustrating to a lot of people like her and her friends and many of her associates who I came to know, that these major lawsuits tend to be, a lot in a lot of people's minds, overreaching and tend to brand an entire industry as being something just like a bunch of rogues, you know?
Right. And let's not forget, these are the companies that make life-saving medicines. And in some cases, like the case of Johnson & Johnson, they make a lot of other products that are useful to people on a daily basis. So, you know, I think we have to be careful before we paint with a broad brush.
So what's the answer here? We do know there's corporate malfeasance. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, Jennifer, that happens. I mean, we all didn't fall off a vegetable truck yesterday. We know this happens. Are you arguing here that we just need to maybe take a breath and step back a little before we launch a full fusillade of these people?
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe that state and local governments should be bringing public nuisance lawsuits against any company in order to fill government coffers and avoid the possibility of having to raise taxes. I think if a particular company or industry engaged in illegal behavior, then they should be prosecuted and fines should be paid and people should be made whole. But the types of cases that we're seeing now, in particular, the one out in Oklahoma against Johnson & Johnson for the cost of the opioid crisis, there's no allegation of any, you know, illegal activity or unlawful activity. The allegation is simply that Johnson & Johnson should have to pay for the police, the social workers, the, you know, all of the social services that the state of Oklahoma says they've incurred as a result of the opioid crisis. And, of course, it's impossible to delineate how much of the budget of cities and towns, right, goes towards that. I mean, you're going to pay the salary of the police chief regardless of whether he's focused on bank robberies or opioids.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so that's a static cost. But nevertheless, they're asking that these companies pay it.
And then, of course, exactly what happens with that money when it gets on a state level. Now, here in Connecticut, as you mentioned, we are notorious, you may have read this over the years, for frittering away and doing nothing with the money that we've gotten over the years from one of the tobacco settlements. And we have no prevention programs. We have very few cessation programs. Jennifer, why? Because that money ends up going into the general fund here in the state.
Exactly.
And that goes to, hire more legislative aides and things like that. So, yeah,
exactly.
Even that.
Yeah, and Connecticut's not alone. I think it's a very, very small percentage of money from the tobacco settlement that's gone to any prevention or treatment at all Most of it went into general operating funds in all of the states. And, you know, it's just, it's really a scam is what it is.
Exactly. It's what it is. Jennifer, thanks. Jennifer Braceras, she is a columnist blogger at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org, former commissioner of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. She served in that capacity from 2001 to 2007. Jennifer, thank you. We appreciate the time today.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, she was familiar, too, with what went on here in Connecticut. Now, as far as opioids, and I wanted to have her on because this opioid story was actually posted yesterday. Good work here by the folks at the Connecticut Mirror. You should check out. That's one of the best sites in the state. Between 2006 and 2012, now get this, 2006 and 2012, Connecticut pharmacies dispensed more than 675 million opioid-based pills. Now, again, I understand that some people need those medications. Sometimes, and Lord knows, I've interviewed people over the years who have, you know, certain maladies. They're dealing with cancer, back problems, musculoskeletal issues, where people have tried everything. They've tried aspirin. They've tried ibuprofen. They've tried naproxen sodium, Aleve, Tylenol, you know, all the over-the-counter stuff. Ibuprofen, acetaminophen, however you want to term it, generically or brand name or otherwise. And for a certain group of people, maybe it's not as big as people think, they need some sort of an opioid-based pill. Now, these numbers come from, it says here, a database maintained by the DEA that tracks, believe it or not, every single pain pill manufactured in the U.S. I mean, that's why, you know, your scripts you get from a doctor have an identifying number on them. There's a DEA number if you get a narcotic from or an opioid-based medication from a physician. The database was obtained by the Washington Post, which battled the DEA and the Justice Department to get to the information. Now, let's go to Connecticut here. This, again, in the Connecticut Mirror, courtesy of the Washington Post. The leading prescription place for opioids. And again, this, I don't mean to indict these people, but these scripts are all legal, apparently, and they were given out the top spot is a company called Value Healthcare Services in Cheshire. So between 2006 and 2012, we'll start the list here, according to the Washington Post and the DEA, this Value Healthcare Services gave out 14,687,728 doses of opioid-based medications.